This week's episode of the FitCast is brought to you by TurbulenceTraining.com and by StrengthCoach.com. Well, welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast. This is episode number 122 for Sunday, February 8th, 2009. I'm Kevin Larrabee. With us this week, we have a new host, but first, John says he has to go first, so we have Jonathan Fast of AcceleratedStrength.com, and also Jonathan Fast off blogspot.com, where he did not post a new blog, but instead lied to the whole 5,000 people that we have listening to the show. And you can find John next week at Mike Boyle Strength and Conditioning in Winchester, Massachusetts, and you can feel free to write stuff on his car.
Yes. Yes, you can. It'll be the one with the jersey plates.
Indeed. The next host that we have is a new host that we have to the roundup, and I'll explain that again in a little bit. And that's Cassandra Forsythe from CassandraForsythe.com. Cass, how you doing?
Great.
It's nice to have you in the rotation, and I think people will remember you from your previous guest spots on the show and also from your many articles on Figure Athlete and also T-Nation.
Yippers.
Then there's Tony Gentilcore, who was on the show last week, and he's back again this week.
Interesting, I was on the show last week.
It's so nice of you to come on. You know, even if it's just a call in, Tony, I really appreciate it.
You know, anything I can do to liven up the show, game.
Yeah. I mean, your vocabulary is pretty limited, but it works out well for everyone else. And that's you can check out Tony's stuff at GentleCoreTraining.com and also the Boston Herald Step Up blog. Last but not least is Lee Peel of Avidity Fitness. It's been a while, but it's .net, right?
I'm going to be nice to you because you don't feel good.
Good. Well, you know what, Lee? I shouldn't be nice to you after this crap that you're pulling on the JP Fitness forums. that's just classless.
Oh, what's this?
That is a classic.
Yeah, what, I have no idea. What's this? I'm out of the loop on some gossip. What's going on?
I happen to have an avatar that I'm using for my posting. And it happens to be of a little Richard lookalike. That's all. It's purely innocent.
I gotta go and find this.
It's really funny because people
it's
are
not
really
little
confused.
Richard. It's
Richard Simmons.
Richard Simmons.
Richard Simmons. Sorry.
You could always use the picture from Kevin from Halloween at Krusty Performance where he used.
I thought of that, but it didn't blow up well. This one looks so much more. You know, it's fitness orientated. It's really. It confuses people, though. It's really fun. Because people already think I'm a guy as it is, so now they just don't know what to think.
Oh, yes. And that's avidityfitness.com. You can... We'll just keep that as a running joke. So, we're back this week, and we're going to talk quickly about some FitCast-related stuff. First off, as we mentioned before... we have Cassandra Forsythe on as a new host, and what we're going to do from now on is we have a solidified group, more or less, that's going to be Jonathan, Lee, myself, and I guess Tony to a certain extent, bearing...
That's when I don't call in, if I can actually do the show and not call in.
Yeah, Tony will show up every week nonetheless. Well, we also... have Jen and Cassandra on as well. That will be more of a like a part-time setup. So it's going to allow us, especially for our female listeners, to get a much more dynamic range of people to answer the questions. And also, it's great to have Cass on for her vast nutrition knowledge as well. So. Cass, it's like I said before, it's a huge pleasure to have you as a part of the FitCast group here.
Thank you, and I also want to thank you, because then I get more chances to interact with you guys and throw on some ideas, and with Lee, you know, having another woman in the nutrition world to talk to is cool, because I mean, hey, look at the ratio. Yeah. But I did blog about, I had my appendix out 2 weeks ago, and I blogged about some of the theories about it because I started doing some big digging and talking with some other people about it. And I did a very long blog post, pretty much. It was my other day of procrastinating from writing my dissertation because I just never want to graduate, apparently.
That's fun, and people can check that out at your blog, correct?
You betcha.
Awesome. The also, I apologize for my voice. If I meant to mention this before, but I'm battling a little bit, and this is, you know, this is complete bullshit because this is a week after I said I'd never get sick on the show.
Oh, that's funny, you did.
So it's pretty much karma sucks, and it's funny how things work out like that. But the next thing that we're going to quickly mention is the videos are up on YouTube. People can check those out at youtube.com/thefitcast, and we have about 70 of the videos that Tony, myself, and Brian St. Pierre shot a couple months back, and we have pretty much everything up there, and you can watch them in high quality, and I guess what turns out to be the YouTube's version of high definition. And the best part is it's all free. So you can go there, you can see us doing not only some, just I think a lot of people have been sending me emails about how it's helped them just improve their form and also pick up some new exercises to use with their clients and in their own programs that they may have not heard of or seen before. So hopefully it should be a great little database on what people can use to put stuff together. So I hope people out there like it. And if you do have any exercises that you do want to be filmed, I know we're missing lunges. We never got to lunges for some reason, but I'm sure that I will head down to Crush Performance and meet up with Tony and Brian to film the rest of this. I don't know if I'm allowed to film them where I work. So,
They probably wouldn't like you there.
Probably not. The next thing, this is something that I added to the outline, but I want to bring back the voicemail box, and the stipulation I have with this is that we have to spend $130 on software so we can play the voicemails back to the rest of the hosts on the FICA. So I'm willing to do that, but only if we get 10 voicemails within the next week as questions for the mailbag. And this doesn't also just have to be questions for the mailbag, but also it could be roundtable discussions that you want us to have, anything like that. So what you need to do is this is a number in the United States, but you can call it at 978-633-3488, and I'll put that number up in the contact us section as well. And you just leave us a voicemail, and we will, again, if we get 10 within the next week, I'll just bite the bullet and I'll... It sounds like a lot of money for a piece of software, but we will definitely do it. And I think people enjoyed that in the past. I know we had quite a bit of voicemail questions a couple weeks ago, and it will allow us to have special guest appearances from people like Arnold Schwarzenegger via the soundboards that they have available on the internet. Next piece, the form itself. I've had to make it so a moderator has to approve your admittance into the forum. So if you do sign up and you're not on and you don't have access to the forum, just please email me at kevin@thefitcast.com and let me know, just because we've had a good amount of spammers on the site, and we had some pretty not safe work pictures posted on the forum. So
we're just I didn't even see that.
Yeah, no, I caught them pretty quickly, but they were probably some of the worst pictures that you could put up on a message board. So just got to tighten things up for a little bit, and I know people don't want, you know, ads for Viagra or anything like that on the forum. We want to keep it strictly about fitness and nutrition and rehab and injuries, things like that. The seminar at Mike Boyle's is coming up next week. All of us are going to be here, except for Lee, who has business to attend to in North Carolina.
I won't be there.
Oh, Cass, you're not coming either?
No, I can't.
Oh.
Sorry.
Well, the guys will be there.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
ladies.
High fives and eating beef jerky.
Nice.
Yep.
Nice.
Yep. So, we will be there, and please make sure if you do come. I know we have like at least 10 or so listeners that are going to be coming to the seminar, which is, I think we only had 3 or 4 last year, so it's going to be really cool to meet up with the people, and feel free to go up to Tony and give him a big hug and a kiss on the side of the cheek, and give John and I a handshake, and we will definitely have some good conversations. I'll probably show up like an hour before the seminar starts at noon. We'll probably show up like around 11 o'clock, or I may go get a lift in. I don't know.
Yeah, quick story. When I first met Tony and he, you know, gave me a hug and a kiss on the cheek, I was a little taken back at first. But, you know, then I realized, you know, Tony's
really
a sensitive guy.
Remember, we met on the corner in a city street in Boston. And
yeah. I thought it was a weird request to just hug each other the whole time. But, I mean, he, you know, justified it by saying that it was cold out and that it would do that. And I said, well, I guess. And, you know, but, you know, Tony's a good guy, so.
I'm just looking forward to hanging out and eating some dead animal flesh and talking shop with everyone.
Oh, you can also see Tony at Starbucks.
True.
The next piece, I was supposed to do an interview with Chad Waterbury this past week for his new book, Huge in a Hurry, but something came up and I had to help out a friend, so I was not able to do that interview with Chad, but we're going to do it this week on Thursday, so we'll have it for next week's episode. Also, Craig Ballantyne and Alan. Craig Ballantyne will be coming on probably not next week, but the week after that. And Alan, Erica, and I hope I'm saying that correctly, he will be coming on the show in the next couple weeks as well. So if you have questions for any of those guys, we're still accepting questions for Chad. Just send them to questions@theficast.com, or you can go to the contact us section of theficast.com. It's right on the upper hand part of the website, and we'll make sure to ask those. So we're going to take a quick break. I'm probably not going to talk for the rest of the show.
Yeah, seriously.
I'm just going to let everyone else talk. We'll be right back.
If you want to boost muscle growth and blowtorch body fat, head over to turbulencetraining.com, and also check out ttmembers.com, a monthly turbulence training website where you can get a new program every single month.
All right, we're back, and the first question comes from Huck, and it reads, "Hey, FitCast folks, I'm a guy, 34, 5'8", 174 pounds, vegetarian, relatively healthy veg, not so much Doritos and Twinkies veg, but no calorie counting yet, and I travel a lot, mostly to remote field sites. I lead a very active lifestyle with a few hours in the water swimming slowly every day. Over the last few years, I've been gaining weight, not in the muscle gain sort of way, but in the was skinny headed to flabby sort of way. I've seen this trend coming from a ways off, so I started working with a trainer about 2 years ago for weight training and functional athleticism. I enjoy it, get something out of it, but it's been rough going. I don't make serious gains, and I'm not really sure if I'm stopping my slide into flabbiness. I'm dedicated and work hard, 3 lifts, 2 cardios a week, but my travel schedule equals time away from the gym and maybe diet slow me down. So this is a multi-part question. Got any favorite workout tools while traveling, addressing diet while traveling, and how to deal with vegetarianism, particularly protein issues? Any tips you've got would be appreciated. You all do a fine job. Thanks, and Huck." So Lee, what do you think?
Okay, so the first thing I want to attack is I'm not exactly sure what functional athleticism is, but there's something about the way that you talk about your training routine that kind of makes me think that you might be one of those people that gets to balance on something funny. So first, I would make sure that – I mean, I don't know. I get this vibe like the dude's like balancing on something. But first, I would make sure that when you're not traveling that you're doing as much as you can. Don't mess around. Get in the gym and lift hard. If you really feel that that you're not putting on a lot of muscle mass, but you are putting on fat, which is kind of weird because if you're putting on a lot of fat, it means that you're probably in a surplus. And if you're lifting while in the surplus, some of that should be transferring to muscle. If it's not, then it means that you need to go harder in the gym. you need to go harder in the gym. Make sure that you're hitting the weights harder and really going full at that. So when you're at home, be it talking to your trainer and getting him to kick it up a notch, or, you know, leaving them all together and picking out another program, whatever, just make sure to go hard when you're at home. I'll leave that at that, because when you're at home, you have a lot more options. As far as when you're traveling, if you don't have access to a gym, you said you're on site a lot. So if you don't have access to a gym, then I would look into working on a lot of body weight movements, pistols, various push-up techniques, things like that. Stuff that you can do when you're away from home. I personally am a big fan of like free walking, and I do a lot of that stuff when I travel. I play with things. I find sidewalks, playgrounds, whatever, and I go and I have fun and I train, and it's fun. It's a fun way to get an exercise when you're traveling. So that's certainly something that you can do. There's always a park somewhere, and there's always, you know, just even a wall or a building, something that you can have fun with. Google bodyweightculture.com. Some of the stuff's a little weird, but overall, there's a lot of great ideas for stuff that you can do just with your body and a pole or things like that. So looking at as far as dieting while traveling and the vegetarianism, I'm going to assume that you're vegetarian, not vegan, based upon your statement. You can get in eggs. You can get in certain kinds of dairies or cheeses if you're lactose intolerant. Of course, that can vary. But overall, you shouldn't have too much issue with the protein aspect of things, as you can get in those. You can also just get in, you know, higher protein, beans, quinoa, that kind of stuff. And there's always a grocery store everywhere. People neglect the simplicity of that, but you can go into the grocery store and you can grab something, and most grocery stores have microwaves. Gas stations have microwaves. You can heat it up. Simple as that. And don't overcomplicate it. People overcomplicate traveling and dieting. It's really not that hard. And there's always restaurants that have calorie amounts if you're really that cautious about the things you're eating. So try and sum it up. And I think that covered it. And if anybody else wants to throw in, go right ahead.
Tony, what do you think?
Add in a few thoughts. You know, the first thing that caught my attention with this question is the fact that he mentioned that he's not counting calories yet. That always boggles my mind when people are perplexed why they're gaining weight when and yet they don't count calories. So my first thoughts were to be start counting calories. I mean, you're not that important or special where you can just neglect the laws of thermodynamics. Calories in versus always going to trump anything. So start counting calories. That'll absolutely help. As far as traveling in the gym, you know, anytime I travel, I look where the local gym is in the town or city I'm staying at. So, getting on Google or whatever search engine, if you're in whatever city you're in, looking for a local gym, it's easy. You know, I've always done it. Even when I'm up in Maine and in the middle of nowhere, I'm able to find a gym. So unless you're in North Dakota, and I don't know, you should be able to find a gym somewhere. You know, and like Lee said, body weight stuff. I know Cosgrove has a lot of DVDs where it's all body weight exercises. That might be something to look into. Even getting the perfect push up, you know, as cheesy as it sounds, at least it's something you can do while you're traveling. And I agree wholeheartedly with what Lee said as far as how to diet and stuff while you're traveling. Going to the store, you just have to make an effort. You know, people, you know, like to complain that they travel and they don't have time to do this. But with that complaining, you have the responsibility to do something about it. So, I mean, certainly it's going to take some work, but it's definitely doable.
Yeah, just to throw in on what Tony said, because that's exactly what I was going to say. With those local gyms, you can usually contact them in advance and just make something up to get a free pass for a week. So it doesn't even necessarily cost you anything to use those gyms, and you can say that you're in the area and you might be moving there and you want to look at local gyms or something. But even if you can't get in on a free pass, usually they work something out for you for like a week, you know, a week's pass for a couple bucks, and it's not really that expensive. And of course there are new videos that have been posted from the Fitcast, so all kinds of exercises that you may not have tried, so you can try that stuff too.
I have the next question for Cass. This is from Colleen, and the question is, I have a protein question for you guys. How much protein can the body process at one time? Is there a benefit to spreading out protein throughout the day? If I have tuna with egg whites and then follow it by a protein shake for lunch and get 91 grams, can I use all of it or am I wasting it? Thanks, Colleen.
Well, I'm going to preface this by saying I'm not a protein expert per se. I've been to a lot of seminars on protein, so I'm just disseminating information I've heard about the protein research. Now, most of the recommendations for protein intake do suggest about 1 gram per pound of body weight per day. If your body weight is more fat than muscle, it's probably better to have more protein than less anyway. There's the thermogenic effect of protein. There's also the stimulatory effect on muscle protein synthesis that comes from protein intake. But it sounds like your day, Colleen, is just protein foods, tuna, egg whites, protein shake. Your body does need other macronutrients, not need, but can benefit from a small amount of carbohydrates. And you do need your fats, especially your essential fats. So, with your egg whites, having a yolk in there for cholesterol, because cholesterol is one of the nutrients that is a precursor to estrogen and testosterone. So all your female and male sex hormones, and it's also the precursor for vitamin D. So you need other macronutrients in your food. So you need a little bit more variety, vegetables and fiber in your diet. So anyway, your first question about how much protein can the body process at one time? There is actually no clear evidence about what the body can process. There's some myth about 30 grams is all your body can process, but evidence from Tipton's lab and Lane Norton, he's a guy that does a lot of research on this right now, shows that your body becomes accustomed to different amounts of protein as you consume them. So say if you are used to only eating 50 grams of protein per day, your body will become used to that. But if your body is used to eating 150 grams of protein per day, and then you automatically drop down to 50 or suddenly drop down to 50, your body will become protein deficient and muscle protein synthesis will decline. So your body is very good at adapting. And protein is one of those nutrients that is less likely to be used or stored as fat, but it can be turned into glucose. And it has other benefits in the body than just muscle, because proteins make up enzymes, etc. But anyway, so how much can your body use at one time? The 30-gram rule isn't right. It just depends on what you have. But it wouldn't hurt for you to have a mixed meal there to help you with your goals. You can benefit from timing of your carbohydrates to spike insulin at the right time, which increases muscle protein synthesis more. And you can also be using fats to make sure you fill up your intramuscular triglyceride stores, which we use for a fuel source, especially in women more so than men. And is there a benefit to spreading protein intake throughout the day? Definitely 100%. Because your muscles synthesize protein continuously throughout the day, more so in the hours after a workout or when your muscles are fatigued from a workout. So spreading it out will make sure that your muscles always repairing, rebuilding, and gaining more protein structure. I kind of want to hear everyone else's take on this, because this is all I know on this topic right now.
Jonathan Fass.
I have nothing to add to that. What are you, crazy? That was awesome. I thought that was interesting. I mean, I've never heard anything that would even come close to disagreeing with that. You know, your body will take in what it's capable of taking in, and it will utilize nutrients, and so you can absolutely, you know, eat what you normally would eat. Your body will become accustomed to that. I'm done. That was awesome. Whatever Cass just said was awesome.
Lee, what do you have to say?
You know, a lot of the same research I've seen. You know, I've seen some research that leads towards a little bit more that we can point to about maybe 0.75 times body weight. And then, of course, the anecdotal evidence can suggest upwards to 1.5 with what you were talking about in respect of building up a protein tolerance, if you will, and being able to break it down over periods of time. Wasting isn't really an issue. or nor should be an issue. You don't turn it over. I mean, you turn it over more than store it. And I mean, you can store it if you eat an excess amount, but it's certainly not on any sort of an aggressive level. And the rest of it, you know, one good thing to note about protein too is the more that you train, the more that you're going to build a little bit of a backstore of storing protein. It's one of the few things that is interesting. When you train, you're going to increase the amount of protein that you kind of keep store in protection of your muscle. So that's always something good to note. So the more training you do, the more that protein actually works for you, in short. As far as the digestion and absorption rate and then meal timing, it really depends and varies. Some people digest qualities of protein a little bit differently. So as far as the spacing out issue, I'm a little bit more of the camp that you don't have to be so regimented with the timing. As far as digestion rates go, it spans a little bit of a longer time for the average person. So being so dogmatic about that, making sure you get it in at this interval in this workout, I haven't found any sort of research, more anecdotal evidence that points to that. So I wouldn't want to label that necessarily from a personal standpoint of research. But so I'm kind of more of the whole day, if you will, of protein is more important than the timing of the protein. But other than that, I mean, I pretty much agree with everything that was said. Yeah.
And I think also something that both of you guys kind of hit on, which I think is important to think about, especially from the idea of forums, because you always get weird information from forums and someone does a Google search and finds some kind of research article to support what they're trying to argue. Research is good, but it's worthless if it's not reproduced. And there's a lot of research that does have these, you know, very low set points for protein intake, and it's kind of confusing to people to understand, well, you know, bodybuilders are taking 2 and 3 grams per pound of body weight, and yet all this research is saying all I need is, you know, 70 grams of protein to support the day. You have to look at the research. You have to look at who the individuals are that are used in the research. A lot of research is done on newbies, on beginners, on people that may not be using a lot of protein to begin with, may or may not be active. They may be endurance athletes and not weight training athletes. So you have to look at the populations and who the research was done on. And then, like Lee was pointing to, there's anecdotal evidence. So if we look back at the bodybuilders that are using a lot of protein to supplement their exercises, you don't know that they're getting results because of the extra protein, but it doesn't seem to be having negative effects on them either. So I think that you have to look at the research, but then also look at what is actually happening to individuals that may not be conforming to that research and try to figure out why there seems to be a disparity between the two.
Absolutely. And yet, you know, a lot of people, as far as the protein issue goes, it's so controversial in a sense, because one, it's not tested on people in the labs like people use it in real life. And then you have to correlate a lot of the bodybuilders that use it in such excess. Are they natural? Are they, yeah, you know, are they using drugs? I mean, there's so many things to take into consideration. I think my biggest thing with the question is the person seems to worry about wasting it. And I definitely don't think when it comes to protein, you should ever worry about wasting it. You know, make sure – I think it's better to be safe than sorry. And I always just basically with the general, unless there's a certain issue, I usually assign one times body weight. And I think that on average, everybody can say that that's a really safe assumption to go to with the average person. And then as, you know, you increase in training, maybe it increases. But I think for the average person training, that's a safe assumption to go with something like that. But we've certainly seen anecdotal evidence up to, what, 300 grams a day, and it seems to be utilized. So it's an interesting question, and I definitely like it.
The comment about the protein research isn't done in people the same way that it's done in the gym, it's half and half true. Tipton's lab and the work that actually Lane Norton's doing right now, they are using real exercisers from the gym. And so his stuff is what I refer to. Lane Norton's probably one of the, premier people in this knowledge category. So I always refer to his research, and his group does do it. And our group at UConn as well, you know, we do it as much as we can. We're doing a protein carb or a whey carb and soy study right now, and it's actually a 9-month training study. And the people we have are training 3 days a week with one of the programs that Creamer designed, and we supervise them. And so, you know, that's only 3 days a week, but it's better than some of the other studies out there. So the research is getting better with applicability to real life. And so, you know, it's some of it you wonder about. There's a lot of crappy research out there, but some of the newer stuff is a lot more applicable and more believable. And it's like Lane Norton was showing some stuff at the ISSN last year, showing that you need to frequently eat protein to keep up muscle protein synthesis. And that has to do with the fact that leucine, the key amino acid regulator of protein synthesis, is very short acting. And so you need to keep supplementing it to keep protein synthesis high. So that's in extreme cases, I mean, of when you really want to build muscle, but also just in general, like having protein at a meal has other benefits like satiation. It doesn't convert to fat as much. The other amino acids that are used for other functions in your body. So having it in a meal is good, you know, but it doesn't have to be something like fish, chicken, egg whites every time too. Like some of the amino acids from vegetable sources, like say if you had hummus as a snack or something, is better than just eating rice cakes, for example. So just thoughts.
All right, the next question is going over to Lee again. It's from Venice. Lee, I'm going to get straight to the point. I am stuck in eating disorder hell. I was really heavy at 275 pounds, female at 5'8". Last year, and I've lost, I guess she says that she's down to 151 pounds. I'm slimmer than I have ever been, and I've been working out consistently for over a year with cardio and weights, and I've been working with a trainer for the last 6 months. I know there is a physical there's physical transformation by the decrease in body fat and such, but my eating disorder has me not seeing an accurate view of myself. I am not eating enough of anything, basically living on protein bars and shakes and almonds and coffee. I am stuck in a vicious cycle because I am terrified to get obese again. Can you help?
Yeah. Well, first off, congratulations on achieving what you have achieved already. I mean, that's a pretty amazing loss that you have there, and it took a lot of dedication to get there. So I'm very happy for you about that. One of the first things that I always tell all my girls with eating disorder issues is that you have to focus on the technical aspect of how you lost the fat in the first place, and then make sure that you really understand and grasp the term of how you achieved it. It's an understanding that you kind of break away some of the fears. So understand that you lost it by being in a deficit, and that you're not supposed to eat the way that you're eating for life, and that dieting down isn't a way of life. And too many people start to do that. So that's one of the first things that you need to do, is really focus on the fact that fat loss itself is a short-term visit, and you should be leaving it as soon as possible. You're not going to gain fat back magically just out of nowhere. It's not just going to occur. You have to eat in excess calories in order to do this. What those excess calories for you might be right now, I don't know. I don't know how long you've been dieting down. I don't know if you've taken any breaks or any refeeds. I don't know what you've been doing. That information isn't in there. So I would suggest that if you have not taken any breaks, if you have not taken any refeeds, that be one of the absolute first things that you do. It's going to be scary to do this. You need to understand that you are going to gain weight, and that every single person, man, woman, eating disorder, no eating disorder, when they leave a dieting stage and they enter into a maintenance stage, they're going to gain weight. This is from physical food weight in the stomach. This is from glycogen. This is from water stores. Usually we can expect an average of 1 pound for every 200 to 300 calories in keys, but it depends on the macro. For example, you're going to store more in physical weight if you increase your calories or carbohydrates versus like protein. So those little things are going to vary, but overall, you need to eat at maintenance for a little while. You need to take a break and understand that you are going to gain some physical weight from that. It has nothing to do with you gaining fat. And the longer that you stay at that break and you kind of chill, the better that you're going to feel. after that, you really need to start varying your food sources, get in better nutrients. You're not eating whole foods, really. You're basically eating supplements. And while that can be okay in a short-term fix when we need it, overall, you need to retrain your actual eating. All you did was you cut your calories and you stopped eating, really. And that's not going to change your lifestyle. You need to actually change how you look at food. You need to enjoy food. You need to try wholesome foods and good foods. I'm not a hater of coffee or protein shakes or anything like that. But at the end of the day, the majority of your meals need to be real food. And you need to dive into that. And don't be afraid that you're going to weigh more eating some of that real food than you are the fake food. It's going to, you know, you put broccoli and you put, you know, vegetables and meats and, you know, all those kind of things in your stomach. It's going to weigh more than some almonds and coffee. You are obviously eating kind of more calorically dense but low volume foods. And when you switch it over to kind of whole foods, it's going to feel different. You might feel different. It might take you a while to kind of adjust to it in your stomach. If you're having any problems, take some probiotics or some enzymes if you need to kind of help it along to get your body going again. But overall, you need to make a lifestyle transition. And as far as if you have to lose any more weight, I don't know. I haven't seen you. I don't know what your goals are. But you need to really solidify what those goals are, where you're going, and how to put an end of it, and when you'll be done. And throw that to anybody else if they want to jump on it.
I was just going to recommend a book that might be of interest to Venice. Is a book called Rethinking Thin by Gina Collada. And I'm not sure. Have you read that book, Lee? Rethinking Thin.
I have not. I have not read that book. No.
It's a good one that just talks about different ways people can eat, and especially people that have had a tendency to be more overweight and obese, that they will approach food differently, but then not just differently like in the way they look at it, but mentally. Not that food is the enemy or food is a fix for anything. It's a nice book. It's got some science in it as well, and just good dialogue. It's one book that was really nice to read that
definitely
I would recommend.
Check that out. Okay. Sorry. Am I supposed to ask? I'm sorry, John. Am I supposed to ask you? I am. Sorry.
Sorry.
I didn't see the window pop up. My bad. Next question. This is to John. I wanted to know your opinion on using sweeteners instead of sugar. They have less calories, but I hear they do a lot of damage to your body. What would you recommend, using sweeteners or just both avoiding both sugars and sweeteners altogether? Sorry if this is a noob question, but I am a total noob when it comes to getting healthy. Keaton.
Hold on, John. I hope you have that tall glass of Haterade before you start talking, all right?
No, I mean, this is a legit question because I think a lot of people ask this. I mean, anything in moderation, I would assume, and the girls could definitely give you a much more scientific answer than what I'm going to give. I tend to try to avoid stuff like that just out of a personal kind of philosophy. I do try to keep things as, I guess, natural as I can, given all the hormones and stuff that they inject in foods anyway. But I tend to go more on something like unsweetened drinks, water, teas, coffee, something like that. But I don't tend to use either sugar or artificial sweeteners. I would tend to lean towards using sugar before sweetener. But again, how much sugar are we really talking about? And if you're eating an otherwise healthy diet and you're not having cookies and cake and ice cream and all types of garbage, a little bit of sugar with a meal, you know, it's not good, but I don't know that it's going to really hurt you either. Sweeteners, it depends what kind of sweetener. And I'm really going to throw this back to Cass and Lee because they're going to be able to tell you a lot more as far as the research on sweeteners. But just from a personal standpoint, I tend to not to try to avoid artificial sweeteners.
I'm just going to jump in real quick. With sweeteners, she had mentioned damage to your body. There are thoughts that sweeteners may be carcinogenic may cause cancer, may have other effects. The big thing I feel, though, with sweeteners, because I don't think that's exactly the most plausible thing with carcinogenic effects of sweeteners, because there's a hell of a lot more things in our food supply that cause cancer than artificial sweeteners. But they're so much sweeter than sugar, and that you become used to such a high level of sweetness that it becomes almost like an addiction and something you get so accustomed to. So you crave sweet things all the time. And then when you go to eat something like fruit or berries to, say, sweeten your oatmeal or a little bit of applesauce in something instead, it's not sweet enough for you. So you don't even appreciate the sweetness that's just naturally found in a food. So sweeteners, you know, with their 10,000 times sweetener or sweeter effect than sugar or fructose or whatever, they can really throw your body off. And again, like I said, there's studies that show that they are almost reinforcing, meaning that when you have it, you want more and you crave more, and then you just get in this circle of craving sweet. That's what I've – my opinion. Lee, what do you got?
You know, it's an interesting thing you bring up. There was a study done about the palate and about how I can't remember it. But anyway, it basically alluded to what you were talking about, and alluded to kind of the physical changes that can actually happen on the tongue with the use of artificial sweeteners. But it wasn't just artificial sweeteners, it was a bunch of different kind of sweeteners. I'll have to find that. I bet you'll find it interesting. But it didn't really necessarily throw out anything conclusive, but it definitely threw the idea out there of kind of how we program our actual taste buds to enjoy things that perhaps we shouldn't be enjoying in such a mass quantities. I don't have any sort of hate for artificial sweeteners. I'm kind of in the same camp as Sean, you know, like in moderation, everything's fine. I'm more of the thought of eat something that does something for you as much as possible versus being afraid of something. I don't really know what they can do. I can probably step outside and have worse things happen to me than by eating a little bit of sweetener. But at the same time, you know, I try and eat things that do something for me. If I'm trying to sweeten up something that I'm making, you know, I go for dried fruit versus artificial sweetener sometimes, and I take my calories and I own them. And sometimes there's something to be said for owning up for your calories and not trying to cheat them. Sometimes there's something to be said for like, you know what, I want to eat this, and I'm going to have to take the fact that I'm eating something, it has calories, and I'm going to have to utilize that energy. I don't know if you want to call sweeteners cheating or not, but I find that just going incredibly overboard produces a really negative effect to how you look at food and how the outcome of what you do is. So scientifically, we don't know, but I do know that I it's one of those things. It's a gut feeling. I don't think in excess it's a good thing, and I think moderation is best. And I say try and do the best you can to really own your calories. And if you're going to have something, I kind of go with sugar because you're kind of owning it and you're saying, I'm deciding I'm going to eat this. I'm going to use the energy from it. I'm going to make it worth something, and I'm just going to kind of own it. That's kind of my thought.
I think that was a great point, too, about cheating your calories, because there's an entire side industry of foods to cheat your diet. You know, oh, this is no calories, this is no sugar, so you can have as much as you want. And, you know, if you're cheating your work, you're going to cheat your results. I think that's a great point. I mean, you know, the cookie here, the soda there, the whatever it is, and people say, no, I'm sticking to my diet, I'm sticking to my diet, and they're probably eating 300-500 calories additional of little cheats throughout the day, or little, you know, oh, I'll just have a piece of cake, or I'll just have a bite of this, or just a 3-pack of cookies, and these things add up. So it may not be the same thing to say, you know, a little artificial sweetener that has, you know, like a sugar alcohol or something. But there is a point that it kind of leads into a behavior of little ways around your diet, and it doesn't always work so well when you do that.
The other reason why people avoid sugar for the its physiological effect of stimulating insulin release, there is research showing that it may not stimulate as much of an insulin release with artificial sweeteners, but there is some enough to. For example, like in our research at UConn, we've seen people get knocked out of ketosis from eating too much artificial sweeteners or artificially sweetened foods. So it can happen.
Which sweetener was that? Which sweetener was that happened with, out of curiosity?
Just variety. It was just the same for each person. It just, anytime people would have, well, mostly I think it was the alcohol sugars, but you know, people would have like their sorbitol lollipops and then have their sugar-free ice cream or whatever. But we were allowing them to have one a day, and the people that were having one a day had lower amounts of ketosis or would be in negative ketosis than the people that didn't have it at all. So there's some physiological effect. Maybe it's not so much an insulin thing, but maybe it's something else. Maybe I'm not sure what, but you know, maybe fat oxidation is lower even with that. And again, like the reinforcing effect in the brain, like dopamine lights up and your brain goes, woohoo, sweet. So it's like almost addicting. Okay, last question is for Tony. Well, and all the exercisers out there. In the videos that you guys posted, I saw some new exercises, at least new to me, that I have some questions about. There are about 10 different benching movements. Which ones are best for strength? And what benefits do you get from the lockouts? Finally, same in regards to the 2 and 3 board presses that Kevin talked a while back.
I know that, you know, that we included 10 benching movements because Kevin is very much benching. So,
fuck you.
So that's why we had to do close grip, wide grip. You know, Kevin was all about it. But,
all right, no, we're not even going to say that, Tony, because that's bullshit. And we wanted to cover all the movements. So we have an extensive video database, period. I'm going back to muting.
I want to have a very complete list of benching variations.
Dude, sick Kevin is not putting up Yeah, I don't like him at all.
Dude, everyone look at my Facebook profile after the show, by the way.
Saw that.
You will now.
You suck. Hate you.
So anyways, Tony, continue.
But to answer the question, as far as which ones are best for strength, I mean, there's a reason why we didn't include videos of like pec flies and dumbbell flies and cable crossovers and stuff like that. I mean, a big advantage of using the bench press is the fact that it allows you to use the most weight. I mean, outside of talking about mechanical advantage, you know, whether or not you're better with a close grip as opposed to a wide grip, as opposed to a medium grip, whatever one allows you to use the most weight is the one that's going to be the one that's best for strength. As far as lockouts and 2 to 3 board presses, I'm a big fan of board presses for two reasons. One, from a corrective exercise standpoint, if we have somebody who's we're kind of facilitating coming off of a shoulder injury, you know, there's certain progressions we take with them. Board presses is somewhere in the middle. It's not something I would start somebody off on, but it keeps them out of a pain-free range of motion. But also from just a performance standpoint, the 2 to 3 board presses will help work certain areas of the bench that someone's weak in. So if someone's weak off the chest, someone's weak in the mid-range, someone's weak at lockout, we can overload the bench press in that range of motion with the boards. And also it teaches them to not rely so much on the stretch shortening cycle. So you have to come to a complete pause on the board and explode off the board and then finish the movement. The lockout, same thing. I don't remember what lockouts we included in the video. Did we do like pin presses, Kevin? I don't remember.
Yes.
What lockouts he's referring to. So that's the same thing with the pin presses. You're coming to a complete stop. You have to develop a lot of starting strength and to finish the movement. So as far, and again, it's, you know, we, depending on someone's training age, I use that in quotations. You know, we're going to be fluctuating those movements, you know, every, you know, 2 to 3 weeks, sometimes every week. Someone like myself, John, you know, any of us who have been training for a while, we might do it on a weekly basis. So 1 week I might be doing a 2-board press. The next week I might be doing a floor press. It's just going to change. But for most people, and I would say for the majority of people who listen to this podcast, every, you know, 2 to 3, leaning more on the side of every 3 weeks, you know, they should be fluctuating their main movements when we're referring to benching. But, you know, again, it's the ones that are the best for strength are the ones that are going to allow you to use the most weight. So that's why we included so many variations of a bench press, is because pec flies and cable crossovers. I mean, what's going to build more mass and strength? A cable crossover that limits you to 30 pounds, or a bench press where you're doing 150 for reps? You know, that's going to be more of a stimulus for the muscle to grow. So that's why we included so many different variations.
I'm gonna throw 2 cents in there, and kind of put an asterisk on what Tony said, because he was dead on. But I think also it gets to the point of the question was which ones are best for strength, and my question is what are you interested in becoming strong in? Because if we're talking about a flat bench, then right, we want to utilize a flat bench movement to increase our strength in that movement. But if for some reason I'm interested in incline bench strength, then a flat bench will add maybe a little bit of carryover because it does utilize the entire chest. But if I'm interested in being stronger in a vertical kind of motion, then maybe I need to train in a vertical motion. So I'm assuming he just means general strength, or what can I use the most weight on? And Tony, you know, nailed that. But you do have to kind of break down and decide what your goals are. And if we look at like powerlifters, where one of their competitions is bench pressing, that's where a lot of these things come out of the board lockouts and the pin lock presses and things like that. And those exercises really are usually accessory lifts to your primary lift of the bench. And like Tony said, those are designed to help you in weak points. So if you know, we're not really looking at maybe one exercise or one type of bench, but which maybe 2, 3, or 4 movements might work best to give you the results that you're looking for. Because if you ask me what's the best for strength, I'd say the one that reads deadlift. So it's all relative.
Right. And I mean, and that's a good point too. Like going back to the board pressing, it is a very specific movement for powerlifting. So I don't want people to think that, you know, it's like a Crusty Performance, for example, we're having kids doing 2 and 3 board presses all the time, because we're not. You know, I don't find a lot of merit in most people doing, you know, 3, 4, or 5 board presses unless they're in a suit. Mm-hmm. There's just not going to be a lot of carryover to whatever they're trying to do. But, you know, certainly for people who are training for a powerlifting meet and they have a sticking point, that's where the board presses are going to be very valuable. And I mean, even if it's just an accessory movement for the triceps, like I like 3 board presses for just direct tricep work. So I might be on a certain day where it's like a max effort bench day, you know, I might work up to a heavy single, some triples. Later on in the workout, I might add in some 3 board presses for reps. Like we're talking 6, 8 reps. Just to hit the triceps, because I mean, essentially, that's what you're hammering are the lockout is triceps, anyways. So, yeah, I could go on forever, but I'll stop there.
Very good. And I think we alluded to last week talking about super maximal loads. Awesome if you can have a couple people with you to train with.
Are you talking about like eccentrics and stuff, or
yeah?
I mean those are okay. Even personally, I haven't used those a lot. I can maybe count on one hand in all the years that I've trained that I've used eccentric training or
yeah, but it's fun.
Even if it was just working handoffs, like you know, yeah. Just giving the body. I mean, the other day we had one of our guys doing reverse band bench presses. One of our older guys who was thinking about doing a powerlifting meet. And you know, one of our young kids is like, "Oh, what's that do? Why is he using the band? Isn't that helping him?" And I said, "Well, one of the big advantages of the band is, you know, you're teaching the nervous system what it feels like to hold a heavy weight at the top. Because you know, a lot of guys when they're not used to bench pressing 300 pounds, as soon as they're at lockout, oh fuck, that's a lot of weight. You know, there's no way in heck I'm gonna get this. You know, there's no way. You know, and they're really failing right from the start. So, I mean, there's some merit with doing, just working on the handoff and holding that weight up for, you know, 5 to 10 seconds and just telling your nurse, this is what it feels like to hold that much weight. And then from there, I mean, I think even Kevin, when you did your internship last summer, there might've been a phase of like 2 weeks where we did eccentric training. You know, and I mean, and I can, I think that was the first time I've done eccentric training in at least 2 years. But certainly, you know, when people start talking about, 120%, like, that's too much. Like, I'm sorry, but anyone who's doing 120% eccentric, that's like the fastest eccentric ever. There's no way in hell they're controlling that. But you know, I'm more in the lines of, you know, 100 and maybe up to 105%, 110 maybe, and that's even pushing it. So Whenever I read someone saying, oh, do eccentrics 120% you won't rep max, I kind of have to cringe a little bit because that's I don't know, maybe John – hopefully John agrees with me.
Oh, yeah. That's a lot. I mean that's – you know, there's
– I see programs saying, okay, we're going to do – this week we're going to do eccentrics 120% you won't rep max. Yeah. I'm like, there's no way – there's no way they're going to control that.
No. No, there's not. Plus there's also – I mean there is also the more boring point of connective tissue – and yeah. being able to actually support that weight when you're not trained to that weight. Yeah, I mean, eccentric is a good thing.
I've never really found a lot of carryover to doing dedicated eccentric training with the bench. Like me, that's just me personally. Like I'm sure people have, but I have not found a lot of carryover from doing a phase where I do a month of eccentric only benching. I just haven't found that carryover, but it's not to say that I haven't added it like on a week, just on a whim to be, hey, you know, let's do something different today. Let's, you know, we have five sets of bench we're doing today. Last two, let's just do a dedicated eccentric. You know, we've done that. And I have done in the past, like I said, just working on the handoff and holding a lot of weight.
Yeah. Yeah. And that does work. And that's that neuromuscular argument.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
argument. Absolutely.
Nervous system. You know, you're just telling, because, you mean, we've all been there where we, as soon as they unrack the weight, it was like, oh my God, that's heavy. And, you know, you're failing right off the top. So,
yeah. I find the eccentrics work best, and again, it's just anecdotal, but I find the eccentrics tend to work best in body weight exercise, especially for people like brand newbies that may not be able to do a push-up or do a chin-up. Absolutely. That tends to work very well, but for an open chain, free weight type of thing.
Yeah, open chain benching, I've never seen it. Like me, that's just me personally, but with pull-ups, absolutely. Like we do that a lot with our girls and our guys. I mean, we do it with our guys too.
Yeah.
With females – when I program, okay, we're doing eccentric chin-ups. Like, what are you talking about? I've never been able to do a chin-up in my life. And I'm like,
yeah,
that's actually a lot of merit with doing the eccentric pull-ups. And I call them pull-downs or whatever. I mean, I just
– right.
But yeah, you're right. Absolutely. Like the open chain stuff, I just don't see a lot of carryover with it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would maybe consider it for plateau buster once in a while, but
yeah.
I would probably rather move to a complementary movement rather than just eccentrically force what you're already failing at.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to bag on any one movement or methodology or anything like that. I mean, certainly I've used it. I mean, any kid, we've all used it. But like I said, I might throw it in on a whim, just be like, hey, you know, let's throw in a set of eccentrics. And you know, it's more so just for us to have, you know, to break the monotony of training. You know, when you're training for so long, it's like sometimes you just need to do stuff that's fun. And, you know, it doesn't really have to have a rhyme or reason to it. You know, you just do it. And, you know, and that's fine. But whenever I see like the 120% stuff and, you know, 3 weeks of that, and I'm just like, oh, I just cringe sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to take a break from the lengthy discussion, mostly to let Kevin pee, but also for a word from our sponsors. So we'll be right back.
Michael Boyles, strengthcoach.com, the number one source of performance enhancement information on the internet. Are you looking for cutting-edge information updated almost every day? Do you like info-packed forums with almost real-time answers from industry experts? Then log on to www.strengthcoach.com. For only $1 for 14 days, you can test drive the number one source of performance enhancement information on the internet, strengthcoach.com. Have you logged on today?
We're back after a short break. John, it's time this week for the Pink Dumbbell Award winner. Wait for the music to play, John.
I'm waiting.
You got to let it finish.
I'm waiting. All right, I think this week's Pink Dumbbell Award goes to Colleen. It's a good question. It's a question that comes up over and over again, but I absolutely loved the discussion about the protein because I'm a nerd and I enjoy stuff like that. So, Colleen, congratulations.
Good job, Colleen. And John is going to put that award right next with all of his Transformers and Powder Puff Girls or Powerpuff Girls, whatever they
Transformers,
are.
New trailer last week during the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that was dope.
There's a Transformers number 2?
Oh, yeah.
It's coming out. The first one was so good.
Where the heck have you been?
I didn't watch the Super Bowl. We were at Dr. Volek's house, and talking, and that's about it. He's got a sweet house, you guys. Oh my god!
I'm sure.
Like, is that
when I met him last year at your wedding, I mean, he's an in shape guy.
Ugh, I know, it kills me. I'm like, how do you sit on your butt all day long and still have abs? I hate you. Jerk. But he does. But he's my supervisor. I can't look at him. He has a nice butt. That's all I can say.
Wow.
But I didn't say that online.
Did you?
That's being recorded.
Oops.
Cass, did you hear that? That was your defense not getting passed just there.
Oh.
When he's sitting on the review board.
Be like, you fail. You fail. Check out my butt. No, we all do. All right. Anyway.
So we have two forum topics that we're going to get to quickly. And, you know, we don't have an off-topic discussion this week because, you know, no one wanted to talk about Transformers 2 or the G.I. Joe movie or, you know, Crank 2. Oh, Crank 2 is going to be a great movie. And
I hate I missed that one because I'm actually Kevin. On your side, Kevin.
Oh, you liked Crank, the first Crank?
Okay, Jason Statham banging Amy Smart in front of a busload of Asians. What is not to like about a movie that
does
that?
That's what I said. You know, to Tony, and I know Brian St. Pierre is listening to this, you guys are just, you are not men, period. I don't care. This is a guy movie. This is like Die Hard.
Like watching movies that are good.
No,
horrible. But the beauty of it is how bad it is. How bad. It's so bad that it transforms over into the good category.
And if someone knows how to find that ringtone so I can put it on my iPhone... it's like the dying heartbeat ringtone. I want that thing.
Are you serious?
And please feel free to include Amy Smart's phone number.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Amy's Outside Providence. If anyone's ever seen that movie, she's in that movie.
It's probably a chick flick.
No, it's not at all.
All right.
Alec Baldwin's in it, actually.
I'm surprised you saw it without Gandalf. The next two things that we're going to have are forum topics that we're going to bring the forums back into a little bit more. You can check out the forums at forums.theficast.com. And again, make sure if you do register, shoot me an email at kevin@theficast.com letting me know that you are not going to post about... you know what was great that I saw on TV yesterday while I was training a client was the... there's this thing for women that you can put on and it like hides your muffin top and it like gives it like a breast lift. Have you guys seen this?
No.
Yeah, I was going to buy that the other week, of course. You gotta hide your muffin top and give it a breast lift. Like, the best thing you can get.
I think that's called a corset.
Oh,
no,
yes.
It's not. It's, well, yeah, obviously, but...
Kinky Kevin.
I think we're gonna edit that out. If you had dead silence, it's because I had to blank something out.
You know, and I was worried this week that because you couldn't talk, we may not have a fail, and yet you delivered.
Now we're gonna have to blank that out. Can't do that. I have family members that listen to this.
Don't worry, Kevin. They know you don't have sex.
You know. That's not okay. That's not true.
I mean, I'll back Kevin up on this one. I know that I've seen the evidence.
Nothing. You can't just don't talk about that, Tony.
Too much love in this room.
That's going to be hard to edit. There's just going to be a lot of someone talking, then just dead silence. Okay. All right, that's fine. So. The first thing that we're going to talk about quickly is a discussion that we had on the forum that was titled Set the Record Straight, Abs and Lumbar Flexion. And we're going to send this one to Jonathan Fass. He actually replied in the thread, but I thought this would make a great topic for the podcast. The question or the topic was proposed from Chad, and he said, okay, so I'm new to all this and I'm a bit confused about ab work. And the quote, olden days all ab work seemed to be sit-ups, then came the crunch. That's about where I left it back in 1998, the last time I stepped foot in a gym. I'm back now and I'm hearing all about how crunches are bad for you, specifically because of the flexing of the spine. I'm hearing that we want our spines to remain rigid and to resist flexion, not to encourage it. Okay, that makes sense to me. I'm sure a lot of back injuries occur while the spine is bent. So I'm looking on T-Nation and stumble across this article, which is titled Staggered Ab Training by Christian Thibodeau. And he says, this seems to highlight a bunch of ab exercises that all include bending of the spine. What's a newbie to think? I've been limiting my ab work to hanging leg raises and planks, but I'm looking for the straight scoop. So, John, what do you think?
Yeah, I had replied to this. I mean, I think first we have to look at it's an ab article, so of course it's going to have crunches. I mean, if we write every ab article saying do some planks and do some holds and whatever, it's kind of a boring article. So I'll at least preface it with that. Basically, what I'd respond with is, you know, the research would generally disagree with the majority of the idea of flexing the spine, but I don't personally have a problem with crunches. Specifically, it's the idea of just rounding the lumbar spine. So you still have a majority of opportunity to round the thoracic spine, your upper spine versus your lower spine. And that's to some extent what the upper spine is designed to do. If we look at the way that we're supposed to move, the lower spine stays stable while the upper spine does the majority of our movement and flexion and some rotation. And in fact, the lumbar spine does have the ability to side bend. And if you look at the makeup of the way that the vertebrae are actually shaped, it's designed to do that. It's just not really designed to go forwards and backwards. So you can do crunches. You just, to do it properly, I would argue that you really need to stabilize your lower spine and to only move from the upper back. But it does get into the other argument that we put forward a lot, which is, why are you actually doing this? What is your goal to do this? If we want to strengthen the abs, there are a lot of ways to do that, and they're probably more functional in terms of what we actually do during our day than doing a crunch. If I don't have any problem with ab training, I do some of it myself. My clients do it as well. It's important to have a strong core, but just doing endless sets of crunching is probably missing the point of what you really need to do to be not only strong, but to be safe and healthy as well. So definitely get in those planks, side planks. You can get into stabilizing, you know, working the opposite musculature, the lumbar spine, the erectors on your back as well in holds, but the idea is that you're holding, because ultimately we want stability out of our abs. We don't want movement. And I think a final point of that is, and I think it may have actually been in New Rules of Lifting, but I remember reading something and I thought this hit home exactly. If I were to send a package UPS and I didn't want that package to break open when I sent it, how would I wrap the box? Well, I would wrap it, you know, one way, then I'd wrap it the opposite way to make like a plus sign. Then I'd go from the corners and wrap it and make an X on top of that. And that would be the most stable way to wrap the box. That's what our abs look like. The rectus abdominis goes forwards, you know, up and down, and the lumbar spine, the erectors go up and down as well. Then we have the obliques that crisscross, the internal, external obliques make that X. And then our transverse abdominis wraps around the entire package of our lumbar spine and our trunk. So if you look at it from that standpoint, when the abs are engaged, we don't move. And that's the point. So when we encourage exercises that cause movement, we may be missing the actual function of that musculature.
Tony, do you want to talk a little bit?
Again, I agree with John 100%. I mean, I've gone on rants and diatribes about how much I don't like sit-ups and crunch variations just from the same standpoint. I mean, our abdominals, I mean, sure, one of their main actions is trunk flexion, but, you know, their main function is to keep the hips over the pelvis, preventing rotary force. So, I mean, at our facility, we do pallet presses, we do chop variations, we do lift variations. I love planks. They're boring as shit. I don't like it when people say, "Oh, we're gonna go for a minute and a half." I mean, I've worked with trainers who do end their session with 5 minutes of planks with a client, which to me is just a complete waste of time and money. With planks, I'm a fan of making them a little more hard or harder than making them longer. So, you know, we do plank variations, but we make them harder. So it might be doing on one leg. It might be doing them, you know, putting a plate on their back. It might be, you know, doing a transition from a plank to a side plank, you know. So there's ways to make them a little bit more so little bit more exciting. I mean, they're not exciting regardless, but
right.
That's the type of stuff we're doing. And while I do agree that people train their core just by doing the compound movements, you know, when we say deadlift, squat, oh, all you need to do is deadlift and squat and you'll train your core. That's true, but I think it's a little short-sighted and a little silly
to
say. So, because certainly, as John alluded to, most people just don't know how to engage their abdominal structure. So, even push-ups are a great way to do that. You know, and I'm actually bringing this point up in the article, and the first article in 9 months that I'm submitting to T-Nation, that's what I'm going to go into. Like, push-ups are actually a great way to learn how to engage the core, which then will help transfer to other lifts.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the type of stuff that we do. I just don't like sit-ups and crunches. I mean, when you think about it, if you took a hanger and started bending it back and forth, eventually it's going to snap. And that's essentially what you're doing with your spine every time you're doing a sit-up. I mean, even Stuart McGill would say, the research that he notes, I think the International Society of Occupational Health put a workforce limit of 3,300 newtons of compression, and that's what each repetition of a sit up places on the spine. That's 760 pounds of pressure on the spine every time you do a sit up. You know, that's not good. So, and certainly, I've done them. In the past, I've had clients do them, and really, it comes to the client. I mean, if they're doing them crunches, for example, if they're doing them correctly, fine. But I do think there's better and truer ways to train and learn how to engage our core than just relying on crunch and sit up variations.
And to pick up on something that Tony said, I definitely used to be in the camp of, just do your deadlifts, your squats, you'll be fine. It engages the core. But not really feeling that way anymore, and I think it kind of goes back to one of the questions we answered earlier. You know, what are the board presses for? What are these lockouts for? And we talked about the idea of training a weakness. Well, why not train your abs to train a weakness? I mean, if you're lifting a ton of weight off the floor, you've got a ton of weight on your back or in the front, and you're squatting, do you think that your abs are up to the challenge of that, of supporting that weight? It's not unreasonable to train your abs in different movements to support the exercise that you're doing elsewhere, as long as there's carryover. And I think also that there's also a problem with the idea that our abs are functioning when we're doing the deadlift or the squat, because we really, with that means that we're in good form, and that we're in good position. And if we look at someone that has, you know, an anterior tilt or a posterior tilt, what's the likelihood that this person is suddenly activating the abs and correcting the position of the hips and correcting the position of the lumbar spine in order to have a full engagement of the abs? It's really not likely. So you can look at abdominal training just like any other type of training that you might do, is accessory training to your primary lifts or to corrective training and corrective exercise for better posture and better movement and better activation when you are working out and everything else. So I have changed my stance on that, and I don't think that there's anything wrong with abdominal training. You just have to do the right kind of stuff to understand your positioning and to correct that positioning so that it will carry over to everything else. Because I guarantee you, although abs may be working in your deadlift, it's very unlikely that they're firing properly based on presentation.
And even then, John, people get in the mindset of our abs are what we see on the cover of Men's Health.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much more than that. I mean, Greg has gone into it, training the backside of the core. Like, the core isn't just our abdominals.
Absolutely.
The entire lumbar hip pelvic region. So the core is it's so you're able to transfer force more efficiently.
Right.
So, I mean, training the deadlift and squat, yes, that's what I mean when we say that. That, yes, it does engage the core. It does work the core. But yeah, you know, and then it's just a matter of people, you know, doing those movements the right way. Are they even able to do those movements? And then, I mean, we just have to take a step back and do the proper progressions and go from there.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you just yawned.
Wow, we just put Kevin asleep. All right.
Sorry, we were boring you, Kevin.
Next week on the FitCast, John and Tony are fired.
Excuse us for having a conversation.
But as I was saying, bench pressing is the best thing to do.
That's better. We've been having a little bit of a chat in the text box, just going on, continuing on the discussion that we had about artificial sweeteners. I don't know if Lear, Cass, when you guys want to chime in about that. It's just like a bonus knowledge bomb.
We both found an abstract that showed that Splenda alters gut microflora in rats, which may lead to some people's issues with gas, considering that a lot of people eat foods that contain Splenda in it nowadays. Even Coca-Cola has Splenda in it now, and whatever other drinks, whey protein. I don't know. It's just interesting. There may be some acidic effect of sweeteners. So back to eating regular sugar might be good. Better.
We're going to hit the last topic really quickly. I'm going to direct this one towards Lee and Cass. It's a question from Adam on the forums. He says, I've been supplementing with Optimum Nutrition protein for a while. It's good enough, but I would rather mix some sweetened green tea powder with protein to simplify the post-workout shake. Any suggestions for a more fruity-tasting protein that isn't overly sweet and mixes well for $40 or $50? And the thing that I would like to kind of hit on is a discussion that I've had with Brian at Crystal Performance, talking about the kinds of proteins that we ingest in terms of casein versus whey post-workout, and just what your guys' thoughts were on that. Cass.
Well, there's the digestibility of the two different proteins. I was reading this question. I'm just going back to this question, though. I wasn't exactly sure what he was asking. He wanted to mix something sweet in his protein or with protein to make it fruity. I'm sorry, I got focused on his question. So I don't know, casein, whey, that you can mix them up for different digestibilities, but you know, there's also like pea protein out there, rice protein out there. I don't know, maybe different types of protein may be beneficial as well. I don't know. Okay, go back to what this guy's question was, because I didn't get it.
Yeah. Sorry, I kind of just only read the subject and I looked at some of the later posts, so I apologize. That was my fault.
No, but he may have a question. Lee, do you get it? Because I don't get it.
I think what it is he was talking about a protein powder and his green tea, but then the conversation kind of led to what was optimal to take in post-workout. And I think that's... Am I right? Like, that's where like the kind of confusion has come in, I think. But I mean, as far as what to drink for a fruity tasting protein, I am so not the person to ask, because I don't drink fruity post workout shakes. Like, I'm a big, like, I'm either a whole food person or a chocolate person. So that's I know that a lot of my clients rave about the nectar. I know that they make a lot of like kind of
that
fruity
stuff. It's awesome. It's expensive, okay, but it's awesome.
Okay, but yeah, so I don't know. I know that they rave like about that. I really don't go the fruity route myself. As far as what is optimal post workout, I'm of the camp of feeding yourself pre and you know, post, and so I kind of focus a little bit more on the pre and you know, eating overall. There is lots of research that says casein whey mix is a good way to go if it hits you well and if it digests well. I don't freak out post workout, and I'm not one of those people that's like, oh my god, eat, and if you don't eat, you're gonna lose that precious muscle. I don't do that, and so that's not really my thing. But I just kind of go with eat, lift and eat, and you know, if you want to go liquid, you can go liquid in, and if you go liquid, you can certainly throw a nice mix in, but it doesn't have to be that Cass is right. You can go with rice, you can go with pea. There's definitely different amino profiles and digestibility issues for every angle. Just kind of pick your poison, but overall, just make sure you're eating something, because at the end of the day, I think that's what's going to be king. But I hope that answers the question, but I don't really know about fruity, fruity tasting protein mixes.
Personally. Tony knows about fruity.
What?
John, that still doesn't make up for before.
No.
I have to comment. I have a cow's milk allergy, so I got goat's milk protein, and I got the one by Jero. And it's really bitter. So to make it a little sweeter, I use just natural jam, like blueberry or boysenberry jam, like preserves, fruit preserves, like a teaspoon or something, plus a whole bunch of frozen berries. And that makes it taste better. But yeah. Anyway, the goat milk protein, the reason why I was going with it, because I have a cow's milk allergy and I'm always drinking whey protein. I don't really think it's the most optimal thing for my body. But
do you eat goat cheese and goat yogurt?
Oh, yes, and I love them.
Really? Love okay, cool.
Sorry. I have a client
that has the same problem. She goes through a ton of goat cheese and goat yogurt because she has the same thing, lactose intolerance. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good. There's goat milk protein. It's just a little bitter, but you get used to it and throw in a lot of berries, and it's okay.
Cool. I can vouch on the goat cheese. That stuff is good.
Mm-hmm. I made John turn to it because he told me he had a cow's milk allergy, too. So.
Yep.
John,
that was good stuff. And I wanted to point something out too, which I think we can all, it gets a little bit more philosophical, but this FitCast and probably a few others, you always get these questions of what should I do? What is the most optimal? What one thing? I think people look for a one-size-fits-all type of perfect answer to perfectly optimize what they're perfectly doing. And
why wouldn't you?
Yeah, right. And you know, it's just, you don't have those answers. I don't think anyone has those answers. And it's also because, you know, everyone has different goals, different body types, different, you know, outcome, you know, optimally or whatever. So not that these questions are wrong to ask, but they're difficult to answer because there's no one answer for a lot of these things. Just like the girl said just to this one before and what Tony and I were talking about, it's like, you know, what's the best protein? Well, I don't know. It depends. You know, and what's the best exercise? Well, I don't know. It depends. So just to put the thought into listeners' heads, when you're going through your workouts, when you're going through your diets, you be regimented, but don't – or be strict, but don't necessarily be regimented to the point where you think that this is the way to do it and there is no other way, because usually that's not the answer.
I think that's a great point. I think it's a great point. And, you know, in a situation like this, like take this question, what are you doing? If this was a girl who was getting to a lower level body fat and, you know, was in a caloric deficit, then I would have a more opinionated suggestion for what it was that I thought that she should do. If it's a guy who's, you know, bulking and, you know, eating like, you know, 8 times a day just to get his calories, I'm going to have a completely different take and a little bit more of a lackadaisical attitude about what he does post-workout. So I think it's a good point to raise that, one, the more generalized the question, the kind of more generalized and, you know, our answer is going to be. But two, it really is a depends thing. And even that, it's our best guess of what we know and of what we work with. And we're not always necessarily going to, you know, have the same agreeance. But I think that one of the common themes, we can all agree that it's important, you know, and we can all agree that that in some way, shape or form, you know, work out and eat. You know, I mean, and from that, like, you know, and then you tailor based upon, like, are you really stressing your body out? Are you really breaking yourself down? If so, then be more cautious. You know, are you an athlete? Are you doing this? And I think it's those variables that people don't take into account. And I know that people have listened and they've been like, well, you say this for this, or you say that for that. And it's like, but did you hear the question? Because it was completely different than what you're asking for. But they kind of don't see it that way. So yeah. good point, John.
Thanks. And I think also it's not only just the idea of, well, I'm not sure, and each person is different, but each person will be different based on what, you know, how long they've been lifting, what point in their lifting career they're at, what age they are, what's their activity levels. You know, people change throughout the course of their lifespan. And that's something that I find a lot of times, and it surprises me that people don't seem to grasp that. So they'll talk about, you know, again, on a forum, just not to pick on forums, so this is where you hear a majority of these types of conversations. You know, someone will say, oh, well, this is what works for me. And someone else will come back, no, you're wrong. And it's like, well, maybe they're right, but maybe they're right only because this is what seems to be giving them the best benefit right now. But in 5 years, if they're still doing it, they will be wrong. And just like Tony said, where you could have a beginner that's going to benefit just from doing that flat bench and, you know, maybe one accessory, where someone that's been lifting for a long time really needs to change, you know, workout to workout or week to week or whatever it is in their techniques and their movements, because their body changes. And the, in the nutrition spectrum, I mean, there's nothing more evident to me than that. When people are saying, well, I've been dieting for this amount of time and I can't seem to lose weight anymore, or I, you know, been doing all the formulas and I found out how many calories I'm supposed to eat and yet it's not working. That's because these are all just guesses and these are all estimations, and what you do to your body today will have consequence on what it does a year from now. And if you don't adapt as your body does, you're not going to have results.
Word.
Word.
I mean, I can go, yeah, I mean, we can go on like that forever. Like,
if,
yeah.
We could, but that.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
But Kevin, has
going,
to pee again.
I want to go back to it. I'm on my last little bit of energy here. So what we're going to do is wrap it up again. People, you can please send in questions to questions@thefitcast.com for the mailbag, or you can go to the contact page at thefitcast.com. You can check us out on iTunes. Please, we've had tons of people submit reviews. Please, if you haven't already, you can take like 2 seconds, head up iTunes, find us on there, and if you haven't subscribed, please do so. And if you haven't submitted a review, please do so. Or if this isn't coming from me, but if you have multiple usernames, you can do that too. I don't think that's fair, but you can give it a shot.
Are you suggesting that people lie and manipulate the review system?
Lee. That's it. Please check us out at thefitcast.com. I'm going to hope everyone gets this right because I'm only doing it once. I'm Kevin Larrabee.
I'm Jonathan Fass.
I'm Cassandra Forsyth.
Tony Gentlecore.
I'm Lee Pale.
And I'm Tony Gentlecore. I'm just kidding. I'm Kevin Larrabee. Take care.
You had enough energy for that.
Yeah, I saved it. See you next week, everyone. Sorry, Tony.